Hello and welcome to Royale Without Cheese, our bi-weekly podcast in which we discuss both the classic and the unknown of art and popular cinema from the then and now. We are your hosts, me, Tomás Ferreira, Leonardo Miranda.
Hello.
And Miguel Aidu.
Hello there.
This is our talk show segment where we welcome grand indie filmmakers to our wonderful couch and discuss their work. Here with us we have Isadora Neves Marques. She's a filmmaker, writer, visual artist, and co-founder of the film production company Foi Bonita a Festa, together with film producer Catarina de Souza. Her short films and visual artwork have been at acclaimed film festivals such as London Short Film Festival, TIFF, New York Film Festival, and art institutions like Tate Modern Film, Anthology Film Archives, amongst others worldwide. More specifically, her past short, Becoming Male in the Middle Ages, was awarded the Distinguished Amodo Tiger Short Award at the International Film Festival Rotterdam in 2022, and her previous film, The Bite, won Best Short Film Awards in many festivals, including Cecilia Queer Film Fest and Short Waves. We will be discussing primarily her most recent short, My Senses Are All I Have to Offer, which will have its world premiere at this year's Critics Week Cannes Film Festival, opening May 15. So Isadora, how are you feeling today?
Very good, thank you.
Okay, so first of all, we have to congratulate you, like I said, for your recent short film being selected at Critics Week. That's quite an achievement. A lot of filmmakers started there, like Bernardo Bertolucci and Guillermo del Toro, for example. And just for our listeners listening at home, My Senses Are All I Have to Offer really focuses on a young couple, Lana and Lurch, as they really meet through these telepathic phenomena through sensorial pills, which allows them to really, two people, to connect with each other from afar and listening to their thoughts and sensations. And in the film, we find Lurch visiting her parents' old country house and introducing them to her girlfriend. And so what impressed us mostly about the telepathic phenomenon portrayed in this film as a modern way to meet people was how, while being fictional, it really rhymes so closely with the way the world is connected today through social media. And in essence, whether talking about telepathy or social media, they mean this desire for a greater connection, a promise of greater intimacy and understanding between us humans. And yet, despite these efforts, there always seems to be a gap for disconnect or a distance between people. And perhaps the gap is even bigger with telepathy, because it implies this sudden invasion of our own privacy, like when Lurch pops up in Lana's mind while she's at work. And it's very interesting how in the film you find this nuanced way to suggest or indicate the benefits and the dangers of this newfound technology. And so the really first question we would like to ask you as a kickstart is, how did the idea of exploring telepathy between lovers come to you, and how do you feel it pushed you forward in exploring something new in your own filmmaking, your thematic interests, your visual language?
Good question. I think to me, the films I've been doing, so this is my fourth short film, and I'm now working on my first feature. And in all of them, there's always this, I really like to play with something strange and speculative, usually to do with technology. And it's not that I have a program, like a project that I have, mm-hmm. You know, oh, now I need to insert these elements. It just comes naturally. And in this case, I think I was really interested in the intimacy between two lovers, a couple, and the space also that you need to build between you. So it's kind of between intimacy and independence in a way, in a relationship, and how difficult that is to do in a way. And I wanted to play with this idea of what would it be to feel what the other person is feeling, to be inside the body of that person. That was the first idea, very kind of the senses and sensuality. And the telepathy only came later. So when I was already rewriting the script and already kind of brainstorming it with the producer, and you know, that's when I was like, oh, because the film was becoming more, you know, it was shaping itself. It was not a script anymore. It was taking shape. And I was, oh, wait, it could be super interesting to actually do these scenes where they're talking, but in their minds, but they're not really speaking the lips. That could be super interesting visually as a style. And so the telepathy came later, almost in the production phase. And then I became really in love with that as a an idea for filmmaking, also like telepathy. And the voiceover, playing with the voiceover, it's also very interesting, you know, in the studio. So it was a mix of this initial idea and then also a practical in terms of filmmaking. You know, what can this do to my film? So those two things came together in a way that was very nice.
Yeah, and it seemed to translate that visually in very interesting moments, almost like your shots have these aberrations, almost like it's an anamorphic lens. And you can really feel it's almost, there's a word for it, you know, you can feel the sensation in a very palpable way in those moments. And I think, you know, I think it's very interesting the moment where you have, I think it's happens as if it's a flashback and you have Lurch like sitting in this very nature-like place amongst rocks and the earth, and it really gives you a sense of connection. It's almost like an ASMR moment in film, so to speak, where they are connected together. And also interesting in terms of science fiction and what science fiction does best. And I think science fiction is not something that is really dabbled into so much in Portuguese filmmaking, which is a shame. And this is very interesting, this film. It's so very interesting that today, think about the ways that technology helps us bring us closer together. People today, I find, are so used to texting and sending messages. No longer is phoning someone something that is natural. At times, some may even feel uncomfortable that someone, even a friend, is calling. Is that, like happens with telepathy, this sudden invasion of privacy, which is weird. The app that you use less on the phone is to call someone, which is bizarre. You have YouTube, you have whatever, but that you don't use. So yeah, it's this illusion of connection while we don't really have it through messages. And so imagining a future where we come back to that, returning to a sense of calling each other again, but it's telepathy, and what are, you know, the dangers of that, the compromises of that, what happens, it's very interesting to see on film. To that degree, actually, one of the questions is, we were very curious to ask, how did you direct, in practical terms, the two main actresses, Agatha Pinho and Isadora Alves, in these inner conversations that happen mentally in the film, where they have these incredibly suggestive looks to each other, expressing these very inner thoughts and emotions. Talk us a bit through that process.
So, yeah, I want to pick up on what you were saying about the social media and all of this today. You know, of course, again, this is kind of conscious and unconscious. So when I was writing the first script, the initial script for the film, I wasn't really thinking about that. It wasn't, like I was saying, I was more interested in the couple dynamics. But of course, obviously, it was, oh, okay, this resonates. And yes, I was thinking quite a lot also about the violence of social media and the lack of privacy that's more and more all around us, you know, but that you also need to perform, you know, you need to participate in this. So yeah, I was very conscious of that. And I think, of course, the film has that reading. It has that potential reading for sure. I think it's absolutely true. And I like it. I think it's something that I'm concerned with as a director. Yeah, and how do you hold space? How do you preserve your space? I think it's something that these two girls are really coming to terms with. And then just to say that I was looking for, so it was over, the film is a weekend in the life of this people, right? At the parents of one of them, of Lourdes. And I really wanted this feeling of that they are alone with this, the two fathers, it's a gay couple. And Lana, the main character in a way of the film, Agatha Pinho, like you were saying, you know, it even reinforces more. She's within this space that's super small. The house is not that big. The rooms don't have any doors. When we visited the location, I loved it. I loved it. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Because it even reinforced more that feeling of, like she says in this scene at night, like that she can't sleep and the other one notices and that's, oh, you can, I'm not being able to sleep. And the main character, Lana, she says, oh, you can hear everything, you know? And I was always imagining, oh, maybe the two parents are having sex in their room, you know? And there aren't any doors. It's so embarrassing.
Yeah.
And I really loved when I saw the space, the location, I was really happy because I thought, oh, it really translates also the feelings of like invasion, you know, this lack of privacy. So I was really happy with all of those elements. And about what you were asking, it was, I love the experience of directing Telepathy because it was a surprise to me. So my previous short, it was very anchored on a voiceover. So there was a traditional voiceover. The new one, I still wanted to keep that somehow, but I didn't want to do the narrative voiceover. And the Telepathy was an interesting way to do it, to play with it as a device, filmmaking device. So we rehearsed the lines, the dialogue lines, out loud, and then we rehearsed them playing with each other, acting the scene without saying the lines, and with the camera. But this was before shooting, to see their expressions, because it was very easy for them to overdo the expressions, the bodily. And so it was really fun. It was really fun. I think we had a good time. And then it was really, when we went to shoot, it was quite spectacular because, of course, I will be talking before the shoot. I will discuss it with everyone and the actors. And then I will say action, and everyone will go quiet. And the scene will happen without anyone saying anything. And that was super fun. That was really, really, and the first time we did the first take, it was actually the scene, that night scene, when she wakes up. It was that scene. And everyone started laughing because it was so interesting what was happening. And so we really, after that first scene that we shot, we also started to improvise a little bit, you know, because then we understood what we were doing and how quirky it was. And so we started playing with the two actresses, because the parents don't have any telepathy exactly, only the two girls. So it was really interesting. And it almost made me think, oh, I want to think about this in the future. I want to, maybe this is something I want to play with better in the future. I don't know.
Yeah. Has it made its way into your feature film?
No.
No. Okay, we know that.
No, there's no telepathy.
Yeah. So beyond directing, you yourself have also acted in Becoming Male in the Medieval Ages. So how difficult was it to manage both roles simultaneously? Would you act again? And on another point, since the actor Mario Fon seemingly plays an older version of your character in My Senses, and you were in a unique position of having played the role of Vicente previously, what were those conversations like with the actor about his character?
Yeah, it was interesting because, yes, this new film is a non-official sequel of the other one. I mean, people don't need to know that, you know, but it became interesting for me to keep the same names. And the other film, the previous film, is all about this potential baby that these couples are trying to have. And then the first idea was precisely, oh, what if I focus on the baby and then do a science fiction of a science fiction almost? Because the other film is already like futuristic in a way. It would be like even pushing it further. And like, okay, the baby now is an adult and she's a young woman. Da, 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 da. And so it was interesting to imagine the same characters but older, kind of like what's the name, Linklater, you know, with Before Sunshine or Sunrise, and those
yeah.
films, you know,
yeah.
where they grow up, or Boyhood, you know, those kind of films. It was kind of interesting. Or even Truffaut also does that, right, with his four films.
Exactly, 400 Blows.
Exactly. So it was that kind of idea to see what happened. I mean, to me it was interesting because I played that role in the film. It was okay. It's okay. I don't. It's not for me. I'm not an actress. It's not for me. It happened. It just happened that time. But I don't like being in front of a camera, to be honest. And then it was even more interesting because in the space between that film and this film, I transitioned. So that was the big process. So it was funny to see like that. It was really hard to cast that character Vicente that you mentioned, so that I played before, and now is Mario Afonso. And Mario is not an actor. Mario comes from dance, is a choreographer. And that came because it was really hard for me to find an actor for that. You know, I was looking for gay actors in that age frame, like in their, you know, that could pass by like being their 50s. There aren't many available options in Portugal that I was also interested in or fit the role. And so I had to look outside, and then I found Mario, and it's his first movie. So it was kind of an interesting experience. And also be playing next to Albano Jeronimo was kind of intimidating for him. But it was great. I think he played very well. And for me, it was, yeah, I could give them a lot of insights because there was the other film. And I gave them obviously the other film for them to watch as preparation for their roles. And we talked about, oh, what do you think happened to them in this 20 something years? And I told them, oh, I think they became even more bourgeois. I think they become even more, because I think both films, they're not a critique of that lifestyle of a certain kind of cultural, well-off milieu. They're not a critique of that style of life, but there is a bit of corrosive element to it. I kind of, you know, I put my finger on certain things, you know, that's, you know, especially in the other one, in the previous one, I put my finger on certain privileges, let's say. That's something I'm interested in doing also to push that, and, you know, because also sometimes you have, you know, you have this critique of rich people, but you don't have really much of like culture people, you know what I mean? Like artists and people in the cinema, or which is a different, another type of being rich, you know. So I'm interested in also exploring that.
Yeah, definitely. It also it raises another point, now that you mention it. How was it to work with Alban Janoni? Actually, what was that experience like?
It was very easy. So again, I didn't know. It was hard to cast those two men. And then my producer suggested Albano because she had met him before, and said, okay, why don't you meet Albano? Okay, let's see. You know, for a short film, you have to be careful, you know, of course, with who you cast. And at first, I was a bit like, maybe it's gonna weight the film too much, you know, to have Albano there because it's a familiar face for us, for the Portuguese people. So I was a bit like, I'm not sure. And Albano will listen to this podcast and we'll laugh. But then I met Albano and it was very easy. And he was also interested in doing the parts. It's a very small part, come on, for him. But he was interested. It was like, no, I really want to work with you and I'm interested. And so that was nice. And he was very generous. He was actually extremely generous with everyone because, again, he has more experience. It was very, very gentle.
And it's like they say, you know, there are no small parts, only small actors. You know, which shows his
Exactly.
generosity as well.
Yeah, he was very
Definitely.
generous.
So in my senses, even if telepathically connected, Lourdes and Lana are always not always in sync. And I think one moment that speaks to this is a sort of horror shot where Lana is getting something from the fridge and Lourdes appears from behind the door, suggesting that, you know, precisely that in spite of their connection, they can still surprise one another. And, you know, I wanted to ask if you agree with this, and if so, in what ways did you try to explore this ambiguity in how close they are?
I will disclose that I think that's my cinematographer's favorite shot in the film. This is the third time I've worked with the same cinematographer, Marta Simões. She's great. I really love her. She's an amazing cinematographer. Very, as you saw in the films, I hope, very sensitive, you know, to the image. And so I really love working with her. The first time I worked with Marta, my cinematographer, was two movies ago, two films ago. And that was more of a, that's called The Bite, Mordida. And that was more of a kind of, I want more in line with certain psychological horror or body horror, that kind of feeling. It's not body horror, but that's the feeling I was going for. And then the other one was so much more the becoming male in the Middle Ages, like you mentioned before, was much more domestic. And what I told her for this new one was, you know, this film is. The new one is very domestic as well, very kind of about his family and da da da. But I would like to try and bring the two films together in a way, you know, and bring that kind of my love for that kind of psychological horror in a way back somehow. And that shot, like to me, I was like, oh, I really want to do this shot where she wakes up in the middle of the night, goes to the fridge, and I want to play with the idea of the jump scare. So it was a really nice shot for us to think together, and we did manage to frame it in a way that you really don't see her coming up, the lurch when she shows up, and it's not a jump scare because we didn't play with it, especially because we don't play with the music, right? Or with that kind of tension. But like you mentioned, you get that feeling, right? You get that feeling, and I like that. That's enough. That's enough for the film. Those are some of the decisions that came into making that kind of shot. I'm thinking also what you mentioned before about, you know, the film has all of these flashbacks. And I also told Marta that I didn't really want to differentiate too much the real time from the flashbacks visually, but something had to happen, you know. And then we came up with that idea of like the kind of, like you said, wide lens, anamorphic kind of style, which was great. It kind of gave that slight distortion. Yeah, I don't know if you were asking something else that I forgot, maybe.
No, it was about playing with this ambiguity in how close they are, because even though they are telepathically connected, she still manages to surprise her by showing up at the door. So it was more about if this was actually an idea of yours, that they were connected, but at the same time a bit sometimes distant or not quite in sync. But perhaps it's just an idea of mine.
No, I think it's there in the film. At some point, you realize that Lourdes, she didn't take the pill. So they have to take these pills to connect. It's not something that they're not telepaths all the time. And she says something like, oh, I didn't take my pill. So yes, I think there's something going on between those two girls where they're kind of, I think they're, like I was saying, you know, they're trying to understand the middle ground, some sort of balance between them, and coming to terms with that. And you can also tell in other scenes of the movie that Lana, the main character, more or less, she's more into the telepathy. Like, you realize at some point that she was never sexually with anyone except telepathically. So those kind of things for me are what I really love to write. And those are the kind of things that kind of hopefully, even in a short film, give you this backstory, you know, they give you, to make you understand, oh, maybe Lourdes is more, she's not so concerned with this, you know, but the other one, she's really obsessed with this, maybe with this telepathy, which is like you're saying, some of us are always online on social media, and some of us, like, they hate it, you know.
Yeah. Well, and also to continue exploring the character of Lana a little bit, because she's interesting, because there's a clear indication of her also feeling insecure about and self-conscious about her class position, specifically compared to Lourdes and her parents, who are, as you were saying, they are much more well off. And so how did these questions come to you in the process of writing the script and developing the concept and the ideas of the film?
It was important to me to have that element present, but not make it, I mean, like a lot of things in my films, I hope, not too much in your face, you know, it's not on the nose, but it was important to have that. To me, it also comes from like a more biographical aspect. I know I come from kind of a low middle class background. So those things are important for me to explore in the characters. I think it's interesting. And that, you know, one of the main things was for me was that this family that she's joining, in a way, they kind of represent what she wants. You know, she aspires to that lifestyle. You know, she wants to be a filmmaker. They talk about that in the film. So she has this kind of feeling of she has class aspiration. She wants to climb. But then she still feels a bit uncomfortable. She feels out of place, and that's a conflict. I think that's the conflict of the character. It's that kind of, he wants that, but she feels out of place. And she's kind of snarky about it. She's kind of, she he mentions, you know, oh, it's this house, like, oh, it's really revolutionary and stuff like that. You know, he kind of bitches about it. And it does work the kind of things that also working with Agatha was really good. She's an amazing actress. We met last year. We didn't know each other. We met and we really got along. And I immediately thought, like, oh, she'll do an amazing Lena. And she understood. I also asked Agatha, because she's an actress, but she also directed the short film. And I asked her, you know, my character, she's an aspiring filmmaker. Do you feel comfortable? And she was like, yes. It even makes it more rich, you know, because I understand those things. So it was really nice to work with Agatha Pino, because she understood somewhat the questions that I was raising with that character.
I think she had a film called Blue, if I'm not mistaken, that she directed.
Yeah.
Last year at Clermont-Ferrand, I think I noticed it, yeah.
It was great. It's a great film.
Funnily enough, in terms of the working with sound aspect of filmmaking, your soundscape in your short films seems to follow this pattern where you have these surreal rhythmic noises that permeate your shots of nature and of empty spaces where your characters pass their daily lives in, which is something that you recurrent both visually and orally come back to in your movies. There's always this fleeing away from the slice of life narrative and going to these kind of landscapes where people live. It seems like the soul of the characters or us are invited to transcend the place of the story and go somewhere else. And for example, in My Senses, you have the ethereal vocal kind of punctuation along the film. And in Becoming Male, it's the minimalist piano keys, and more specifically, even in terms of its ambiguity, in The Bite, you have these bug-like noises coming in and out. So really, it really rendered this sense specific, even especially in The Bite, they rendered this idea of sounds that live between the familiar and the oniric, kind of lending this sense of the human condition suffering some mutation or change. And really, this begs the question, how do you think soundscape and music in your films, how to express those intentions specifically to a music composer, sound designer? And music composer is really an interesting question because it's a whole different area, another art form than filmmaking. So that's always interesting, how to express those very abstract things to another expert, essentially in a very different field.
So again, like with my cinematographer, this is the third movie film that I do with the same music producer. So again, there's also this familiarity between us. We all kind of already know what we are searching for. I think to me, what I learned with them as music producers was, as a filmmaker, not to be afraid of music, you know, in a film. I think sometimes there is a certain fear of using that the music overpowers or overburdens the film, right? I think that's true many times, especially in Hollywood and stuff like that, when everything's like dramatized by music. But at the same time, I like the musical aspect. I really like cinema for this aspect of, you know, playing with people, with the audiences, expectations, and playing with the audience's feelings. And music is really important in that, as we all know. I think music really has a role in my films. And then the conversation is, like you were mentioning, is what is that role for the film, right? What do I want music to do, and when is it too much or not? And in this case, I actually thought this film would have almost no music initially. I couldn't really imagine it. I was, it was a weekend, and I don't, like you were saying, I really liked the way you described it, this way of kind of the music pulls you out of the slice of life. And I really, more and more, I'm interested in the idea of the slice of life. And I really like how you described it, as music pulls you away. So I was like, no, this is just a weekend. So I couldn't really imagine that. And then it was only, again, after we shot, and I sent some scenes to the music producer, that things started to shape itself. And then I realized, oh no, actually, I loved it. When I got the first drafts of music, I was like, oh wow, this actually gives it the mood. And then it was just kind of controlling, you know, when is it too much or not? And I what I told them was, I want the music, the film is so, I don't know what you felt, but it, to me, it's such a, it is warm in a way, it's very comfortable. cinematography, and I wanted the sound to create this, what Lana feels, this kind of this subliminal discomfort, this rhythm. And I think I was really happy with the results. You know, this kind of rhythms, this, like you're saying, this breathing rhythms. The telepathy, we also discussed about the telepathy, which was a sound design there. We were like, again, like the image, I was like, oh, I don't want to do something that's very obvious, you know, but still something needs to happen, you know. And so in the sound design, Joana, who I was working with, came up with this kind of sort of installation, you know, that the sounds kind of fade out. And I really like being underwater or a pool, but not too much, right? Not too much. And I was happy. But again, it's teamwork. It's teamwork. Yeah.
Yeah, truly, truly, indeed.
Also regarding the bite, we were curious to ask you, you know, what led you to shoot this story in Brazil, and like the how that came about, and specifically concerning the narrative, what were your intentions surrounding the parallel narratives between the scientists and this mosquito epidemic, plus the other side of the narrative, the polyamorous relationship developing in the film?
I think my first two cinema movie films, they were both shot in Brazil. That's because I lived for a year in Brazil many years ago. And since then, I became close to the context, especially in São Paulo. So those two films just happened that, you know, I was writing the stories and they were set in Brazil. And then the last two films are the first ones that I shot in Portugal. So that was also an interesting transition for me, you know, to a different style of production, to be honest, between Brazil and Portugal. I think Brazil has much more of an industry, you know, it's much bigger. So it was a different, and the actors, the acting schools are different. So that was also curious. Looking back about these films, and now that I'm writing my feature film, so it's also kind of a jump. I think looking back at the films, I think it's interesting that unconsciously, in a way, they always have this, like you're saying, these relationships. There's always, like, in that case, it's polyamorous relationship between three people. Can be a family, can be a couple. But I think there's always this, something's happening to a relationship. You know, there's always a drama coming into a relationship. And which is interesting because, you know, the films have this, like we said, the films have these science fictional elements and stuff, and just, but at the end of the day, they're really about relationships, you know, and I guess that's why, like, the slice of life that you mentioned is something that I realized, oh, actually, this is something I feel very comfortable in. The slice of life format is something that I want to explore. And in a way, again, this combination between something technological that's happening, and now it's kind of plays with the life of these people. Yeah.
It's interesting how the science fiction aspects and whatever, you have these abnormal phenomena in films. There seems to be like a group of films where, or filmmakers that are interested in taking an abnormal phenomena or something that is out of this world, placing it in a very realistic and grounded sense. And by the very nature of that abnormal phenomena, it just holds a mirror up what happens in real life just normally. You know, for example, me thinking, despite being one interpretation, not the only one, but me thinking about social media and the consequences of that in connection to our telepathy in the movie is a way to resonate with what happens today, which is interesting. Logistically speaking, this question of, you know, having a film shot in Brazil or then films that you shot in Portugal brings a very fascinating question for any filmmaker listening, which is, how has been your experience in finding funding for your films, which is always that hard work thing? Yeah,
it's not easy. Like, I'm always amazed at how, like, we do cinema in Portugal, right? Like, how do people finance their films? I'm like, it's impossible. And a lot. I mean, so many movies. It's, you know, it's insane. And to me, it's a specific kind of trajectory because I didn't do any sort of film school, so I don't have that background. I come from contemporary art. That's where I built my career. And through in time, I slowly started to move into cinema because I was, it just made sense. It was very natural. I love it. And for the funding part, to me, I started more because I was coming from contemporary art. I could trying to finance what I was doing through like exhibition and museums that I was working with. And, you know, for the Amsterdam, it's a lot of money to make a film, you know, so I had to always negotiate, you know. And that's like, because a museum is not interested in showing this kind of film. And I'm also not interested in, very much in showing this, my cinema films in a gallery or in a museum. I don't find it very interesting. I don't find it interesting because I want people to come into a dark room, sit down and watch, you know. I don't want people to come in and out of the room, the typical museum experience. So there was this negotiation at the beginning, you know, can you give me the money to do what I want? And I'll give you something in return, you know. So that was the beginning, how I managed to fund especially the first two movies in Brazil, was because I had that leverage in contemporary art. Luckily, you know, I built that, the museums trusted me. And then when I moved to Portugal and I started to do the films in Portugal, that's when, you know, I was like, okay, we need to start funding from cinema. And that's a difficult, it's hard. There are a lot of filmmakers and not that much money in Portugal. It's a slow movement. I was lucky that my films premiered in very good festivals, so that helped. And it's film by film, you know. I got money from the Cinema Institute for post-production, for example, you know. And then only then I did for the production. And yeah, but that's been my way of managing to finance this difficult thing that is cinema.
Specifically, were there any alternative routes to, for example, ICA or any of the normal, you know, public funded institutions? I guess the prizes that you get from festivals do help, for example.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, to be honest, for example, the Becoming Male in the Middle Ages, I had won with the previous film, The Bite. I had won a prize, which was the Kodak Prize in a festival. And the prize was actually much better than money because it was, because the film was shot on 16 millimeter. They had this Kodak Prize just for 16 millimeter films.
Oh, great.
And so, yeah, it was a great prize. And I shot almost all of Becoming Male with those, the prize was reels they gave you from Kodak film reels, like I guess almost 20, I think. It was a lot.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was a lot. So, or maybe like 12 or something. I don't remember. So we only had to buy another five, you know? And
okay.
That was a huge cut in the budget. That was a huge cut in the budget. So sometimes those kinds of prizes that are material help a lot more than a prize where you, if you get like, if you're like 2,000 euros, I mean, thank you, but that's going to pay me. You know,
yeah.
one person or something, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think sometimes it will be nice for festivals to try and maybe do more material prizes because they do help sometimes more.
Now, how was it, in terms of logistically speaking, how was it applying to the Critics Week, really? What did that entail?
So, I knew, this is a bit, this film, I'll be honest. So we shot the film in the fall. We shot the film in October. We were producing before, of course, you know, casting, everything else. But then we only managed to shoot it in October. We went straight into editing, music, and final touches, you know. So it was intense. It was super intense because I told my producer, yeah, it will be really beautiful to try and make it to Cannes, you know. It will be great for us as the producers. As producers, it will be great for me, you know, right now. I was very honest, and we were lucky. We applied, and we knew we had strong chances. But I mean, it's a lot of directors, so it was amazing that it worked, you know.
Yeah,
I was really happy. I was like, so amazed and happy. I'm gonna find out why what they saw in the movie. Let's see when I get there.
Yeah.
So, you know, looking at your three films, we can see a change of writing and directing approach in regards to issues that speak to trans people, namely how in The Bite, the exploration of how these characters feel free to be who they are is more nuanced. And then we see Becoming Male and the issues regarding pregnancy and fatherhood are very overtly explored. So is this something you also feel happened? And if so, how important was it to you?
It was a process. No, I think it was, I'm in my films and the films are part of me. I think that's my relationship with filmmaking is very, although the films are not in any way, they're not biographical, but there is a certain intimacy between what I'm doing. That's something that's very, it's not Nanni Moretti or something like that, but there is that kind of, they're close. So yeah, those questions were always important to me. And somehow in finding different ways of touching on those topics, hopefully in ways that are not very obvious and not very on the nose, I want the films to have a richness to them, to the story. And that's one element in the stories, issues of, around gender. They're definitely a big part of the narratives. But they're one element in a bigger picture that I'm trying to write. But yes, they are there. They are there all the time, and they're important to me.
So we usually do the final general questions. The first part is of the where can we hope to see becoming not becoming My Senses. Will it be on streaming anywhere, or is it still doing the festival run? And then also additionally, just for curiosity, is there anything you can tell us about the feature and that process that you're working on? If you want to reveal anything, any sneak peek, I guess.
So the film will start now with the Critics Week. It will do its course in festivals. It will come to Portugal for sure in one of the usual festivals, most likely if you go to Conde, because in the calendar that makes sense. So if that happens, it will come pretty soon to Portugal. That's great. And I think for the first year, it will definitely kind of do the festivals and eventually go into streaming as. I think that's the usual. And the future that I'm working on, what can I say? It's in the same style, so it won't surprise maybe people in that regards, because there is this, it's a very slice of life story, but something out of the ordinary happens in the background, and the relationships of the characters I'm writing really are shaken, dramatically shaken by something out of the ordinary that happens to everyone, I will say, to everyone on planet Earth.
Oh
Is
wow,
this
okay. The
really,
stakes are high.
yes, the stakes are high, but then I focus on a relationship, or a series of relationships. That's what I can say. So it has those kind of elements that I'm hopefully getting an audience used to. It'll be an international production between Portugal and France and Brazil. So those are the three geographies I'm working with. So we will probably be shooting in three different countries and scenes. So it's a big a commitment, but I think we're gonna do it. Yeah.
Yeah, looking forward to
Sure.
it,
It
definitely.
will, but
Yeah.
it will take time. It will take time.
Always
Yeah,
does.
as it does.
And
as it does.
that was the latest from Isadora Neves March, folks. We would like to thank her presence here today. She's truly an excellent filmmaker, and remember to check out My Senses Are All I Have to Offer once out on streaming platforms. If you're a filmmaker running the festival marathon, feel free to send us a message for an interview as well. We would love to promote your work. Don't forget to subscribe, share this interview, or simply give us a like. That's how our podcast can grow ever more groovy. And if you're on YouTube and want to see more interviews like this, check out this next video right here. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
Bye-bye.